Why, hello there, priests. You have found the hardest book review podcast there is, where we digest life-changing books, we shit out greatness, and we change our lives one book at a time. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go.
And here we go. Welcome back. This is Troy Hollings with the Curiously Disagreeable Podcast. 1888, London. The sweltering summer heat oppresses. It's late at night, but you can't sleep because you know the Ripper is out there. Just last week, a local girl went missing. You know the family. She's somewhat morally loose, but that's not a reason to kill her. They're worried sick. Your teeth are rotting, you smell like a troll, and you say things like, blimey. At work, on the docks, the Ripper is all anyone can talk about. An unidentified monster killing women in the most horrible fashion. Like nothing you have ever seen or could ever imagine. Before it's all over, Jack the Ripper will have killed 11 women, and absolute panic gripped the city of London for years. People didn't go out at night. Some of these heinous murders were committed within yards, I guess meters in the British number system, of unwitting, sleeping London residents. And Jack was never caught. He vanished into the night. He could have been anyone, anywhere. You know, that butcher who gets a little too excited to show you his new cut of steak? Well, look at this. This is a new cut of steak. You see this? I always turn to oh, good eye, mate. We're just going to go with it. Oh, you want some steak on the bobby? And you're like, what the fuck? Is this Australian guy, Jack the Ripper? Or the innkeeper who says, now, he's not a good bloke, but I have to say all this Ripper business, it does keep the rooms filled. And you're just sitting there thinking, could somebody be so depraved as to murder other people just to increase the revenue of their hotel? And nobody knew. Suspicion abounded. Lots of suspects never caught. And no one will ever know, because we never figured out who Jack the Ripper was. But if we take a step back, why is a serial killer so scary? Why is it scarier than, say, a disease? You know, on paper, a disease is far more dangerous. A few years after Jack the Ripper, the Spanish flu epidemic would decimate millions of people. And that was terrible. And that changed people's behavior. But even that, millions of people compared to 11, that didn't have the undertone of panic, the undertone of animalistic dread of the unknown. And if I had to guess, I think that built into all of us at some level is a fear of monsters in the night, of hyper-competent humanoid predators that can go anywhere they want, do whatever they want, kill who they want, and fuck any of us. Fear, terror, death. And throughout history, there have been countless examples of both good guys and bad guys becoming those monsters of the night. Nowadays, our modern military dons night vision goggles, suppressed 300 blackout subsonic AR-15s, and goes out and does the Lord's work. But that terror of the unknown, the unseen, the almost magic evil that can steal into your bedroom and end you at any time, that is scarier than any real monster even. It's why reading a Stephen King book is sometimes scarier than the movie. Our imagination, our animal instincts turn into dread. And I'll put forth, there has never been and will never be again a group of people as universally feared and respected as the group we are going to talk about today. Equal parts soldier, spy, serial killer, this group of people had mastery over their entire domain. Skilled fighters, incredible fitness, proficiency with breaking and entering, arson, stealing into the most highly defended dwellings of the world, kidnapping, and just like Jack the Ripper, leaving a trail of bodies in their wake, before anyone even knew to sound the alarm, they were gone. And who is this group?
Well, yes, thanks for asking.
I've waited long and hard for this one.
See?
Because this group is the ninja. A ninja, or shinobi, Japanese for the phrase one who sneaks, was a covert agent, mercenary, and a guerrilla warfare expert in feudal Japan. Their functions included siege, infiltration, ambush, reconnaissance, espionage, deception, assassination, martial arts, and having thousand-pound nuts they dragged around like a prisoner attached to an old-school cannonball. See, they began as samurai, but they weren't tied to the social norms of honor and dying like a bitch. The American colonists to the samurai redcoats, they didn't have time or inclination to die on the battlefield when they could just set you on fire in your own house. And I'm not even here to say that they were good. You know, we're going to learn a lot in this series, and there's some fucked up stuff here. They love holding people hostage. They think if you drink the blood of a live dog, you live forever. But if we have no preferences, if we recognize the way, there's knowledge to be had. And many times these ninjas, loyal to the almighty god known as gold, they were spies, raiders, arsonists, and terrorists. And so think of what Japan was like back in 1600s. It's feudalism. They had limiting beliefs that trade and capitalism was evil and made you less of a man, so generally did not have a lot of economic prosperity. There's some sort of like emperor dude, but you know, the fastest form of communication is like letters on a horse. So you have all these powerful houses, somewhat decentralized, springing up. Part government, part fraternity, part martial arts school. You know, it's like Blackwater mixed with the city of Carmel, Indiana, mixed with a frat. And the ninja, see, they were a smaller offshoot of that because those houses, those samurai houses, were common. And ninjas were uncommon. The first specialized training for the ninja began in the mid-15th century, so mid-1400s, when certain samurai families started to focus on covert warfare, including espionage and assassination. Like the samurai, ninja were born into the profession, where traditions were kept in and passed down through the family. Imagine, it's like, oh, you know, it's like that scene in Step Brothers where he's like, you know, I just decided to join the family business. And he's like, Dale, I'm a doctor. It's like that, except you actually, the family business is assassination. Outside the expected martial arts disciplines, a ninja youth studied survival and scouting techniques, as well as information regarding poisons and explosives. Physical training was also important, oh yeah, which involved long distance runs, climbing, stealth methods of walking and swimming. A certain degree of knowledge regarding common professions was also required if one was expected to take their form in disguise. And so, the biggest difference between the samurai and the ninja is there was a lot less ninja. Because all ninja actually were samurai. The Japanese ninja, or shinobi no mono, we'll just call them shinobi or ninja, were military units or single agents utilized by the medieval samurai clans and families of Japan. They were specialists in clandestine and guerrilla warfare, espionage, arson, a bunch of crazy shit, and they actually, because of course they did, created a martial art known as shinobi no jutsu, which is the art of goddamn doing all the fucking skills needed to be a killing ninja. And that is what this book is about. While still a part of the samurai culture, the shinobi were specialized and few in number. Approximately one of every 400 men in the army would be ninja. They would take part in what are colloquially now known as black operations. They'd be undercover agents who infiltrated the enemy lines and acted in espionage. And there's some thought that, you know, these people, they're probably overhyped, but our hero, which we'll meet soon, says the shinobi themselves, yep, they do deserve the popularity and respect that is attributed to them, as they represent some of the most well-trained group of people that history has ever seen. While their physical martial arts and fighting skills were similar to the rest of the samurai,
They were trained also in other elements, such as infiltration, burglary, and whether the target be a mountaintop castle or a fortified manor, the image of a shinobi creeping in the black of night is historically correct. Recorded as early as the late 14th century, 1300, and finally in the turmoil of the 19th century, 1800, ending, the ninja enjoyed an extended period of military use before they were superseded by the modern spy and army special forces unit. So think about that. 1300 to 1800. That's 500 years of innovation and success. Think of how much better America's gotten at killing in the 25 years of war in the Middle East. Now imagine 500 years. When the Tokugawa family took control of Japan in 1603, the country entered a period of relative peace, which led to the decline of the shinobi as a force on the battlefield and prompted them to concentrate more on the espionage aspect of the skill. And so we're saying it's been around for 500 years, and it started as just, you know, like the samurai. You know, there's a bunch of samurai, and, you know, they're doing war and stuff. And then, you know, maybe you'd have like, oh, these are, that's a sneaky guy. You know, send the sneaky guy. And, you know, they would just sneak in. It'd be part of a war, you know, part of a battle or whatever. But after the relative period of peace, which actually was, you know, roughly around when the Hagakure was written, and you know, Yamamoto Tsunetomo was like lamenting the fact that there was no goddamn war, a small group of samurai actually just pivoted their skills in killing to now killing plus espionage, assassination, sneaking. This decline prompted an increase in the compiling of ninja records with the aim of preserving the ways of the ninja. And in 1678, one shinobi named Fujimiyamiyasha Yatsukosugosuka. Let me try that one again. Fujibayashi Yatsutake. We're going to call him Mr. Y, who is probably of Iga and from a samurai family, finished working on his masterpiece, a collection of shinobi information that he had obtained over an unknown amount of time and through personal experience. This work was known as the Bansen Shukai. So all that's saying is, like, for the longest time, and we saw this in the Hagakure, I mean, like, there was no goddamn philosophy in being a samurai. It was like, just chop his head, mama. But then, you know, with this period of relative decline, some of the samurai moved and they started to, you know, really deeply go into Bushido and living a good disciplined life. And that's the, you know, the Hagakure and Book of Five Rings and shit like that. But another group, they're like, yeah, I don't really care about that. I still want to do killing. I like sneaking. Okay, cool. And then Mr. Y wrote and compiled the secret manual of the art of the ninja, known as the Bansen Shukai. And god damn it, that is what we are about to cover today. 500 years of lessons learned from the metaphorical war in the Middle East, written as an onboarding handbook for a new assassin. What the fuck? Here we go. In the dark recesses of ninja popularity, the name Bansen Shukai has been bandied around with a limited understanding of the work's contents and details, and until now, has never been published outside of the Japanese language. The Bansen Shukai is a document that was written to preserve the disappearing skills of the ninja and to retain the complexities of the detailed art known as Shinobi no Jutsu, aka the martial art of goddamn ninja-ing. Written in Japanese in bound form, it consisted of 10 books, which are divided into 22 volumes. And that is what we're going to read today. Don't worry, I'm taking the best parts, because there's like fucking 50 pages on like how to build bamboo rafts. Skipped all that, don't worry. The entire 22-volume manual on the secret art of breaking and entering, arson, kidnapping, and assassination is here for us today. The importance of the text. The text itself has clearly been of paramount importance to the shinobi community from its first incarnation and has been held as the highest form of shinobi no jutsu documentation from that day until this. So this isn't some goddamn watered down Boy Scout handbook. This is the secret fucking manual that they taught people how to ninja for like fucking 400 years. That's that math, just go with it. The mere concept of it being given to the shogunate as an official application and its use among all the ninja families prove beyond a doubt that these families, famous for their shinobi arts, held this text with reverence and trust. So here, for the first time, the world may see the deadly and complex ways of the shinobi and appreciate the subtlety of their spying operations in enemy territory. Dude, 16-year-old Troy would have studied this book so hard. Good thing it's even better now that I'm 32. The future of the Banzan Shukai rests along two lines. Firstly, as a survival and guerrilla warfare manual. It allows a single human to train diligently, to become a clandestine operative with knowledge that rivals modern-day special forces. And the skills it teaches, if adapted to the modern day, can have relevance for modern espionage and clandestine warfare today. Secondly, the Banzan Shukai makes an immense contribution to Japanese and military history. With this manual, historians can gain access to countless areas of research, from army marching orders to the art of hanging a decapitated head on a horse saddle. I think I left that out, but that shit's in there too. But with any culture, it's hard because there's code words, there's acronyms, there's all this tribal knowledge that if you don't have, you know, I was talking to one of my my coworkers who was in law enforcement in the past, and he said, you know, we realized that it was so hard for departments to collaborate because everybody had their goddamn acronyms. We just decided that plain English was going to be the new language we collaborated in. Now imagine if it's confusing for like 1998 law enforcement to collaborate. What about 300 years of different language and totally different culture? We're not going to get anything unless we have a guide. And thank God, goddamn it, we do. His name is Anthony Cummins. And I don't think it's Anthony. I Googled it a couple times. Anthony Cummins. See, he's done martial arts forever. He grew up doing karate. He became fascinated with swordsmanship and martial arts. I don't even make this up. He started his own ninja martial art. He's wrote a bunch of books on samurai and ninja. He loves swords so fucking much. There's videos of him online chopping pigs in half. And half the internet is so mad at him. Because as a general concept, Anthony only lives for his own approval. And dare I say, he follows the tenets of Bushido, just like our hero from the Hagakure, Alexander Bennett. Because Anthony, he doesn't give a fuck. And I think a second part of why the whole internet is so mad, I mean, he needs to work on his SEO. I Googled his name. Higher than his fucking website is an article by some douchebag who's saying, no offense, who's saying Anthony is a fraud. And it was just paragraphs and paragraphs. And I read it. You know, and I wanted to do some shinobi skills against that motherfucker because I know that the second reason that everybody hates him is he's the type of handsome that makes other men instantly like him and recognize him as their better and makes every lady from the age of 18 to 80 lose command of her tongue, lose the ability to speak, to think, to live, and her only thought, her only purpose is an overwhelming desire to suck. He's a trained locksmith, I actually think, just to be a better ninja. And in his own words, I tend to have a knack for seeing through things. Instead of looking at, you know, say a sword school and thinking, yeah, that's probably correct. I think, that doesn't look right. That doesn't work. That does not fit into the broader picture. Now, this started after I'd been to university. I went to university and did my degree in ancient history and archaeology, did his master's in theoretical archaeology, and the idea is that you have to look for patterns in things. You have to look at the larger picture. You have to look at how things do not make sense right away, and you have to look for the deeper story. And he says, I applied that to the world of the ninja, the samurai, and swordsmanship. And I realized that actually, a lot of it did not make sense. By that I mean, that's not how a samurai would really fight, you fucking idiots. that wouldn't really do anything. And I think he's talking to all the people who put on a face and say, like, oh, I'm teaching ninjutsu. He's like, yeah, uh-huh. Well, watch me chop a pig in half. How's your fucking ninjutsu gonna work now, bitch? And he throws some shade. Then maybe this is why, maybe why people are mad at him, because he's like, yeah, you know what? Look at this. 18-inch penis. They're like, not again, Anthony. This is a children's show. And he's like, I don't give a fuck. Gotta learn to be a man one day. But he says, Aikido, some of the softer martial arts. Yeah, they suck. So, of course, he revived a 1600 ninja manual that we are about to read. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you can go to his website and he will train you in his own revived martial art of the fucking ninja. I can think of no one better to walk us through this shit. So how am I approaching this book? Well, as is tradition with all these samurai manuals, it appears that ninjas as well ain't know nothing about organization. So a huge amount of this is like fucking field manual for ninja craft. And I'm going to go in, I'm going to pull out the interesting, relevant, and, you know, insane parts of this here book. This is more of a safari. Oh, look, a ninja compared to the college class. However, I would say that even the mere exposure, even the tiniest sniff of ball sweat from a 1600s ninja can turn a boy into a man, a dog into a wolf, and a man into, dare I say, a kusemono. So this will be crazy. A lot of this won't make sense, but I can commit to you, if you hold out, if you make it through, this text alone will grant you the power of invisibility, the option but not the obligation to get away with any crime, steal into any castle no matter how defended, and ultimately to live forever. Into the book. Now, Anthony might need to learn himself up on some organization as well, so instead of an introduction, he's just gonna, like, bring up the objection first that, yeah, there's a lot of shit about lockpicking in here, and, you know, I could have edited it, but fuck you, I'm leaving it in. But hey, I'm down. Japanese lock bypassing is both simpler than its modern day equivalent, but yet in some regards paradoxically more complicated. To understand the world of the shinobi and the lock bypassing sections of the Bansen Shukai, the reader must comprehend, to some extent, the old Japanese practice of stealing in. While this topic is certainly complex and takes time to appreciate fully, it can be explained rather succinctly and without too much confusion. So he's saying, we're going to read through this book, but like a huge part of it is lockpicking and, burglary. But like before you can really understand the context of what the fuck they're saying and why they include this, we need to understand what were the ninja doing? You know, what it's like when you go and you are in a job interview, you say, what's an average day in the life look like? He needs to tell us what the day in a life of a ninja would look like before a lot of this makes sense. Old Japanese locks were designed centuries before such intricacies as normal locks could be machined, and therefore contained larger and less complex parts. The Japanese locks of the time relied on prongs, latches, and natural forces of gravity and tension. The Bansen Shukai is not only a critically important piece of shinobi history, but an intriguing window in Japanese culture as well. The final chapters of the In-Nin section contain historical Japanese lockpicking and bypassing methods, which are almost impossible to find recorded in any other document. And so, in good martial arts fashion, you know, there's like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the art of Jiu-Jitsu, you know, kickboxing is the art of kickboxing, whatever. And so they've named, like, In-Nin is the art of using a lockpick to break into someone's house. It's like, what the fuck? Why are you in here? It's like, oh, I'm just practicing In-Nin. It's like, no, you're robbing me. I'm like, no, it's practice. It's a martial art, man. Numerous approaches to these locks were taken by the shinobi, each requiring finesse, skill, and the correct tool. And these fundamentals still apply today in modern locksmithing. It is because of the timelessness of the principles that the lockpicking teachings of the Bansen Shukai are still applicable to this day. As a trained locksmith myself, guaranteed so he can be a better ninja, I can assure the reader that many of these techniques and principles are used to pick and bypass modern day locks as well. He says, overall, the lockpicking section may appear too technical to some, but shut the fuck up. As you read this section, try to imagine the scenario. A ninja carrying lockpicking tools, entering bamboo thickets, using auspicious times, contemplating the position of the moon and waiting for the correct volume of wind, and use that to take your mind deeper into ancient Japan. So he's saying, don't focus on like the technical, like, yeah, okay, these locks don't exist anymore. But think about the complexity of, you know, there's guards and you're having to like go up next to the guard. You've got to wait until there's a moonless night, no wind, and you, boop, open the door, murder time. As you make this journey, see the shinobi as he plans his route in and out of a location. Come to understand the reality of the shinobi's assignment. This will, without a doubt, help you erase the myth of a ninja carrying multiple weapons while storming a location, and it will reveal to you the true picture of the lightly armed spy creeping through a house, listening all he can, and possibly even burning the location down as he leaves. So, Antony, bringing up the objection first, saying, hey, yeah, bitch, some of this is like a manual for a 1600s Honda Accord, but I'm not changing anything, into the Banzan Shukai. The military is the final line when concerning the safety of a country and the issue of state survival. It is of extreme importance because it is the basis of statecraft and the nation's safety, and it is by no means a minor issue. Military craft is incredibly deep and vast, and it is not a matter to be taken lightly. In any military situation, you need to construct the detailed and precise plan beforehand, speculate clearly with the five constant factors in the seven plans, understand the feel of your people thoroughly, and then based on these factors, devise a stratagem and conduct your frontal and surprise ways of attack. If the five characteristics of wisdom, benevolence, trust, courage, and strictness are achieved, and if advantages are derived from the three areas of heaven, earth, and man, then even if you have 1,000 soldiers and have to fight an enemy of multitudes, you can be victorious 100 times out of 100 with absolute certainty. God damn it, I want that. So Mr. Y is saying, hey, we're getting into this. If you listen up to this shit, no matter how unqualified the lead, you will be able to turn it into an opportunity and ultimately close such a large deal that heaven itself will twinkle brighter and Odin's face will appear in the northern lights and give you that little head nod that Jaka would give his men after they return from harvesting souls in Ramadi. Since ancient times, there have been numerous good generals in our country of Japan. However, they govern the country, but only through conquering it by sheer power. In this age of decadence that we live in, people's minds are twisted, and only words are loved, not practical deeds. Dude, imagine being so fucking hardcore that you think that 1600s Japan is an age of decadence. In warfare, you should catch the enemy in a state of unpreparedness, hit them quickly and by surprise, and grasp the intention correctly. If you have myriad strategies, but do not have ninjutsu or the arts of the ninja, then in this case, you will not be able to attain details about the enemy's secret plan or their conspiracies. So he's saying before we can actually succeed at anything militarily, yeah, we're gonna have to master the arts of the fucking ninja. Is there anything else which enables a single person to ruin a force of countless people? You have every reason to study until you reach a mastery of the art of the shinobi, and by any means you can. Then, with a mastery of ninjutsu, even if the enemy has built a strong siege or iron-like defenses, there will be no way to prevent you from infiltrating its keep. So he's saying, listen up, motherfucker. What follows is the instruction manual. To train yourself until you are such a savage, it is deductively impossible that you will fail at whatever you endeavor. The skills of ninjutsu are not occult or wondrous, but are just like the strategy of sword play. That is, it's about hitting the enemy through their gap, hitting by taking advantage of their response or hitting by surprise. Therefore, with the main points of this manual, I write more than 20 volumes on the subject of ninjutsu together with a Q&A, and I do this to record the secrets of the military arts. And now it's weird that it's like an old school 1600s FAQ page. I mostly skipped that, but he's just saying, stay strapped or get clapped. What the fuck? Let's do this shit. The writing is hereafter titled The Bonson Shukai, and from its beginning to its end, it is in accord with important points of the shinobi. This Bonson Shukai refers to ninjutsu and ninja tools, which have been kept secret by the 11 ninja of Igo and Koka. So, hey bitch, there's like 11 mafia families that actually, instead of like using money and being Italian, they just have used like skills of martial arts to become like as popular as the mafia. And that handbook, yeah, that's what's coming. By revealing moral principles, pursuing righteousness, and not concealing injustice, we come to the extreme secrets of the ninja. And thus, we express everything in a proper order. Thus, all rivers in the world flow into the ocean, into something deep and vast. And that's why I titled this entire writing, the Bonson Shukai, A Myriad of Rivers Flowing into the Ocean. So, all that to fucking say that this book, yeah, there's a lot of tools, there's a lot of things, but once you see the way in one thing, you see the way in all things, and all of this flows into the way. This collection of volumes is the true way of the ninja, and is far removed from any lesser construction made by other ninja, who, being from another place, have only learned one or two things, but claim themselves to be ninja. So, he's saying like, hey, yeah, you know, I'm just going to go on record to say that this is the best martial art that's ever lived, and anyone else, like, even if they say they're ninja, yeah, they're pussies. Only when a student makes an effort to deepen his knowledge for a considerable length of time, will he find out himself just truly how deep this art is. And so a little structure is brought to this. And he says, this manuscript consists of six parts. The correct mind. And so we're going to cover that a fair amount. You know, that's like how to think. Like, what's your mindset? What should that be? A guideline for commanders. And so, you know, imagine, you know, these ninja are they're you know, sometimes mercenaries, but sometimes like attached to military units too. So if you're a commander, your enemies have ninja. And so it's like, well, fuck, dude, you know, now I gotta have a fucking ninja. So things to think about for being a commander, yonin and inin, which is like yonin, I believe, is like the art of aggressively, directly breaking in to places. Inin is like the art of using deception to break into places. Opportunities bestowed by heaven. So this is like a bunch of bullshit that doesn't have any science in it. And then ninja tools, which is cool, but also like, again, dude, I've got a fucking pistol now. Of these, the correct mind chapter is placed in a primary position because a correct mind should be the basis for everything and every deed. And so he's basically saying like, hey, what follows is great power. And we're going to try to like do a little bit of responsibility. Correct mind is first. So that he just doesn't want to avoid a risk of teaching an evil person these skills. I put correct mind first of all. This chapter will discuss the path of loyalty, the reason for your life and death, which will together help you acquire the correct mind. Although to dedicate yourself to sincerity and wisdom might bring ridicule upon yourself, doing something with the correct intention will aid you in the end. However, a mere novice should use this chapter as a lead and keep its teachings close to heart at all times, even when taking rest, sitting, or sleeping, thus building a brave and fearless mind. If you know this skill in every way, a soft and weak person will become hard and strong. An evil-minded person will become loyal. And goddammit, I need this, a stupid person. Yes, will become wise. And so he's basically like, hey, yeah, I know you've like been thinking your entire life, but you're doing it wrong. So how about you just read my words and just think exactly how I think? Because if you do that, if you're weak, you'll become strong. If you're soft, you'll become hard. That's weird. And if you're evil, you'll become good. All right, Jesus Christ. Continuing his explanation. In the third section, we're going to talk about yonin. You know, these are like seeing, observing, because there's nothing. So just ignore what I fucking said before about that. Like, I don't speak Japanese, homie. You know, so this yonin, is seeing and observing and inferring and understanding the enemy, because there should be nothing that you do not see or hear concerning the enemy. This is the task of the shinobi. Those studying this art should not think that these skills of observing and listening are not the skills of a shinobi, and must remember not to neglect anything. Then there's Inin, which is, he writes about shinobi night attacks, robbery. You should not make light of these tasks either, as you may think they are not what a shinobi should do, but night attacking is a shinobi's job in every respect. Therefore, night attacks without the knowledge of ninjutsu will not be effective. Also, a ninja without the knowledge of how to attack at night cannot reach the true essence of ninjutsu. Now, I will say modern day incarnation of ninjutsu is probably equal synonyms with bullshit. Before the UFC, there was a lot of fucking bullshit that just was in the martial arts world. And so, you know, like Krav Maga even, and I'll defend it a little bit as well. But you know, like, if you're never having that feedback, you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to jump on. Like, I remember before, this is embarrassing, but I remember when I was like 14, I remember truly believing in my heart that if I just like stood in the woods and was really still and I had a machete, I could chop a deer. Jesus Christ. And why did I believe that? Well, basically Rambo. That's the only reason. But if you never have that feedback loop of hunting, you're like, yeah, and obviously, like, just chop it, dude. I'm not a pussy. And then you go out and try to hunt, and you're like, dude, it's even hard to kill a deer with a fucking rifle. And so nowadays, ninjutsu maybe is a tiny bit more real, because, you know, you have like, oh, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you've got boxing, you've got UFC, you've got MMA. And so, like, if I truly was following the way of ninjutsu, I would go train MMA and then be like, ah, okay, well, what parts of ninjutsu don't work anymore? But that is 400 years later. This, when we're saying ninjutsu, I can in full faith and good knowledge say it's real. This is exactly how the ninjas would conduct their lives back in the day. You should try to learn the use of ninja tools on your own to decide if they are good or not. And I think he's talking about like tools, but also like, he's like, hey, listen, take what you find is valuable from this book and discard the rest. Because unless you prove its worth, you should not use it. And that's what I'm going to do here. I'm just going to put my nose right next to the book and sniff. I'm going to skip whole sections. You know, like the art of listening to people snoring or the art of unscrewing gates. But then I might read entire passages, because the goal here is to go into the world of a 1600 samurai, and not just any samurai, the one out of 400 who joined a special path, the Delta Force, the SEAL Team 6 of an already harder race than has ever lived before or since, the way of the assassin, the way of the ninja. And as we dive headlong into this book, I'll begin with a ninja poem, because they didn't have a lot of like good writing back then, so you know, anything that you could just like remember in your brain was pretty useful. So there's a lot of poems. Though there are many things a shinobi should keep in mind, the first thing of all is how to get close to the enemy. An ancient saying says that water makes sound when it is shallow, while deep water makes no sound. Just like a mountain stream makes sound as it is shallow, if you reflect on this concept, medium grade ninja who do not have a deep strategy tend to be famous for various reasons. This is because those excellent ninja who have a deep strategy usually will not give themselves away as ninja, but hide it deeply and pretend to be an ordinary samurai, a hermit, or a ronin. As in the case above, competent ninja, even if they have accomplished the extraordinary, make no sound, leave no smell, and get no fame or honor for their bravery. The results they have brought about look as natural as if they were being created by nature itself. Similarly, the wisdom of a competent ninja is as vast as heaven, so that no human being can know it exactly. A ninja should look stupid while their strategies are as profound and deep as the earth or an abyss, and beyond mere human knowledge. So I think the poem of that, that was a weird poem, man. I think the poem is the interesting idea that shallow water makes sound while deep water makes no sound. Basically saying, hey, listen, I'm rich, boy. Like, I don't need a fucking Ferrari. And so with that, with all of that introduction out of the way, we are about to transition into the correct mind. And then we're going to go into the guideline for commanders. There's whole sections about fucking disguise, ninja tools, infiltration, and ultimately, I pull out what we can take today so that we can apply the skill of the shinobi in our normal day-to-day fucking life. However, if you want that, if you want more, if you want everything, if you want to potentially grow wings and a hyper-intelligent 300-pound back, well, you have to tune in next time on the next episode of the Curiously Disagreeable podcast. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that, my pretties, is another episode down of the Curiously Disagreeable podcast. Check us out at CuriouslyDisagreeable.com, the Troy Hollings on Instagram, or wherever the fuck you get your podcasts. The end.